Summertime reminds me of one of my favorite childhood memories, going to the drive-in. My sister and I putting on our PJs, climbing into the back seat of our parents' Ford Fairlane, and off we went to the drive-in right off the freeway in Oakland, California, near where we lived. As soon as the sun went down, the movie started. And I would try to stay up long enough for the one snack bar run my dad would make. It was always a special night, but these days, drive-in movies are few and far between. That's why it intrigued me to read that watching entertainment from your car in a parking lot has become a thing during the pandemic. Could drive-ins be making a comeback in times like these? And are they here to stay? I'm Annette John Hall. This is The Why. WHYY's Peter Crimmins recently checked out a couple of drive-in events, and not just the traditional movies. So, Peter, these kinds of concerts, people are calling them drive-in concerts. Tell me about the concept of that.
I went to People's Light and Theater. It's in Malvern. When I drove up there, there was someone holding a flag and wearing an orange vest who waved me off the street, directed me to a back parking lot. It's about an acre and a half of blacktop. There was someone else standing there holding a traffic cone, telling me exactly where to park. He put the cone in the spot. I parked there, and then he took the cone, moved it over so he could show the next guy where to park. And they put me in the front row, which means my car was about a car length from the stage. I was quite close to the stage. The idea was they made us park in every other spot so I could get out of my car on the driver's side, and there was an empty parking spot next to me, and I could hang out there. I could set up chairs. I could set up tables. I can have friends. We can have drinks. We can hang out as long as we stayed in that empty parking spot on the driver's side of our car. And that way the cars themselves act as buffers between the parties. So no one mingled with anyone else. We kept a distance from each other, but we could be outside and we could listen to music in the open air. It was hot when I went. It was about 95 degrees. We're on a blacktop. There's no shade. So got a little uncomfortable with the heat. But other than that, we were actually, you know, at an outdoor concert, and it felt like an outdoor concert.
Did people seem to enjoy themselves?
They did. They were able to be outside and hang out with the people they like, with their friends, their family.
We drove about 45 minutes from Bucks County.
I spoke with Trish Sammer and Joe Catalese. They're married. They're from Doylestown. And they were just really, really happy to feel normal again, to go see live music again.
Well, I mean, I love the atmosphere. Like, we got great seats. You know, we got space to hang out, you know, so we're not crowded in, you know, the way we would normally be at a show. So I'm looking forward to see how it turns out. And I'd do it again.
And I think one of the main benefits of this was just the mental lift all day long. I was excited knowing we were going to come and, you know, see great live music and do something kind of normal. It's just such a great boost.
And what was it like for the musicians on stage, Peter? Did they seem comfortable up there?
They did. The show I went to, it featured Jeffrey Gaines, who performed solo. A lot of times he has a band behind him, but here it's just him and an acoustic guitar.
Hello. Some more volume, please, on this, yeah?
He was wired up. He was singing into a microphone through big speakers, so it was a very electrified sound.
Yeah. Let's talk about fear. Like the kind they hold inside you when you act as if you just don't hear.
Jeffrey Gaines had been, and still does, a weekly live streaming concert online, I think twice a week actually, so from his home. But he hasn't been in front of an audience in 4 months. He's been very homebound. And you can tell that it kind of got to him.
Last time I sang that full voice, I was at the top of the Art Museum steps.
He's talked a lot between songs on stage, and he at some point caught himself rambling sort of randomly, and he admitted that he hadn't had a chance to actually talk to anyone in a really long time.
Can you tell I haven't talked to people in a while? Super chatty. Thanks for being there.
And then later in the concert, he...
In my urgency to reach you, I've ripped through a brand new guitar string.
And he wanted to play this old song from the Monkees. And so he turned to the audience and said, help me out.
Sing it with me. Oh, I could have neath the wings of the bluebird as she sings.
And he led them in a sing-along, which everyone participated in. And it's also something you can't do if you're streaming from your home, if you're live streaming a concert from your apartment.
Cheer up, sleepy Jean. Oh, what can it mean to a daydream believer and a homecoming queen?
Drive-ins have a long history. How did we get here? And how did they get started?
If you want to talk about the dark ages of drive-ins, I mean, drive-ins, who knows when the first drive-in happened? Well, I can tell you about the first guy who patented the idea, which was in Camden, New Jersey, 1933,
wow.
A guy named Richard Hollingshead, who was a manufacturer of chemical products. The story of the first drive-in in Camden is really the story about cars in America generally. I mean, he ran a chemical company that his father started. His father made products for horse-drawn carriages. He made hoof dressings and leather dressings and things to take care of your carriage and your horse in the 19th century. And then cars came along and the whole company switched to making things for your car, like how to take care of your wheels, how to take care of your ragtop, you know, these sort of polishes and salves and soaps. Mm-hmm. And so then his son comes up, and this is around the time when Admiral Wilson Boulevard was being made in Camden. It was supposed to be the great automobile gateway out of Camden into the rest of New Jersey. It was envisioned to be, you know, a highway system that would stitch across New Jersey, and it would funnel into Camden on Admiral Wilson Boulevard. So it was one of the first, like, very car-centric thoroughfares in New Jersey, and maybe even America. And so here's Richard Hollingshead Jr., who's running a company that makes car products, who's watching this automobile boulevard being built in his town. And he's like, well, let's make a drive-in. Let's do this car thing. Let's get people in their cars and they never have to leave their cars. They can watch movies in their cars.
It's also a Camden story.
I spoke with Bart Everts at Rutgers University. He studies the history of this region. And he says the story of the drive-in is a quintessential Camden story. Because not only was Hollingshead business based in Camden, but so was RCA Victor, the famous turntable and record company. And between the two of them, they developed the sound system for the drive-in.
I worked with RCA to design these individual speakers that would be given to people as they bought their ticket. They'd sit in their car, and then it would be broadcast over a radio.
It opened in June, in the summer of 1933, and its opening night was really, really popular. It was really novel to drive your car into a theater. And apparently Richard Hollingshead had built these ramps that you could drive your car up on an incline slightly so that your headlights are actually pointed at the screen. And so you would actually be tilted back slightly and you have a better sight lines. And it sold out. I mean, the first show, it was called Wives Beware.
How I miss your sweet kiss.
Sort of a schlocky 1930s movie.
Has no chance.
And everyone came. It was really popular.
I'm not sure that it would have succeeded anywhere else that didn't have this sort of convergence of things happening at that moment.
It's just divine to know that you're mine.
So they took off from there. Tell me about how many there were around our region.
Well, they were all over the place. The old Veterans Stadium had it. There was an airport drive-in on Essington Avenue. There was one at 61st Street in Southwest Philadelphia, South Jersey. They were sort of all over the place. And there's still one in Vineland. They lasted 50s, 60s, through the 70s. They sort of die out in the 70s, but they're still around. I mean, there's still at least two within comfortable driving distance of Philadelphia right now.
What happened eventually to them?
At some point, regular movie theaters became air-conditioned, and that was so important that they would actually advertise the fact that they were air-conditioned. So in the summertime, you could duck into a movie theater, not just to see the movie, but just to get cool. People went to the movies often not to see the movie, but just to be comfortable. And it's hard to do that in your car. And movies got more sophisticated.
Red 5, where are you?
I can't shake it!
By the time Star Wars came out in the 70s, movies had really sophisticated sound, they had really sophisticated visuals, and you just can't hear or see that in a drive-in. You're looking through your windshield from, at sometimes, 150 feet away. You just don't have the movie experience of a blockbuster that you would in a regular movie theater. And VCRs came out. People could do this at home. You can sit at home in your air-conditioned home on your couch with your family. The economics of drive-ins, you had to bring in a lot of cars to make a profit at this. There's only so many cars you could pack into a parking lot. And you can pack a lot more people into a movie theater and sell tickets to them. So it just became more and more of a clunky business prospect. So they're around, but yeah, for the most part, they're gone. And so this pandemic was a way to sort of revive the idea of being able to go out and see things and do things, but be contained inside your car, and this time for safety reasons, so you don't mingle with other people.
When we come back,
I think it's time that we have an opportunity to be in a more open-air environment where we feel safe and we have the opportunity to have space around us.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall. I'm talking to Peter Crimmins about why drive-in entertainment is making a comeback. Peter, back to the concert at People's Light.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how all of that came together.
Well, in March, everything shut down, as we know. All live theater stopped. And immediately, theaters and concert promoters and people who put on live events has started to think really, really hard about what to do. So a guy named Richard Carden.
From Point Entertainment, myself and Jesse Lundy are independent concert promoters in the Philadelphia and suburban markets.
He saw all his summer concerts dry up. He started looking at alternatives.
And one of the agents that we had been talking to had kind of said in passing this idea of a drive-in concert. That kind of clicked off something in my head.
So he started investigating that. And Richard Carden told me that he had been searching around for a way to do a drive-in. And none of it worked because he could get an open field with a fence around it. But he would have to bring in everything. He would have to bring in the stage, the lights, the sound, the food, the staff. Everything would have to be brought up from scratch. And then out of the blue,
I got contacted by People's Light, Chaz Brastow over there, who we've done some things with in the past.
Chaz Brastow,
and I'm the director of production here at People's Light.
And then when People's Light called him, he's like, oh, they already have everything.
You know, they're theater people, so they build the stage, and they've got everything in-house. You know, they can kind of do everything. We brought sound in, but other than that, they can build everything.
So it was cost-effective, they could get it up quick, and they could run with it.
And I said, what do you think? What's possible? And we just started running with that.
And so Rich started booking bands. They put out a pilot episode, sort of a feeler to see how this would work.
We did one show. We did about 35 cars, and it was great.
Tickets sold out immediately. And so they thought, we have something here. Let's run with it.
You know, you said People's Light is selling out. Are they making any money?
I'm not sure if they're making money at it. It doesn't look like they would be making money at it, to be honest. They can only bring in so many people. They're limiting it to 50 cars. And if you figure there's probably somewhere between 2, 3, or 4 people per car, you're looking at 150, 200 people. And that's pretty small. That's about the size of a really small club. And there's a lot of staff that goes into this. And I think the point is not really to make money, but rather to reach out to their audience, to make sure their audience is engaged with live performance again.
So much screen time in our everyday lives right now. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm zoomed out. We do live theater. We don't put TV screens on stage typically, unless, you know, it's written into the play. It just seemed core in essence to try to honor that And at the same time, you know, performers need to perform. So it's as much for the artists as it is for the patrons.
There are other places that is more profit-oriented. There's a thing called the Parking Lot Social, which is a nationally touring drive-in experience. It's like DJs and movies and some live bands and games, trivia games, and karaoke, which is like karaoke, but in your
karaoke.
Car.
Okay, I got that. I got that, Peter.
And it's intended to be a little bit like a circus. You come into a city, in this case, the Navy Yard in Philadelphia, in a big field. You inflate these enormous inflatable things that are really eye-catching. You stage it for 2 weeks. You pack it up. Move on to the next city. Right now, as we record this in Philadelphia, this is their third city, and they're going to go on to others. So you have to imagine someone's making money at this.
So, Peter, will these drive-in concerts have the potential to be the next popular summer thing to do, especially with COVID?
Certainly this summer, they seem to. It's the only way, it was one of the only ways, to see live things. It's a safe way, relatively safe way, to see live things. And they're popping up. Everyone seems to be showing a drive-in movie somewhere. If you have, you know, a parking lot and a blank wall, a lot of stadiums are rigging themselves up, mostly because, you know, you can't see sports either. So you got to use your stadium for something. So and they have huge parking lots. So it's happening a lot. Whether or not it'll continue, who knows? I mean, into next summer, I guess, depends on the course of the pandemic. And during this time, people are really starving to get out and do something.
It's the new normal. I think that drive-in concerts are going to be like drive-in movies from when I was a kid. I don't want it to ever stop.
I spoke with a woman named CJ Kona at People's Light. She's of a certain age where she remembers very fondly going to drive-in movies when she was a kid with her dad.
My father introduced me to them, loved them. The cartoons, the movies. We were in our pajamas. They packed food. I think it's time that we have an opportunity to be in a more open air environment where we feel safe and we have the opportunity to have space around us. I think space is important. So this unfortunate situation that's going on globally, I think could turn out to be a very positive thing in regards to the new normal.
Well, Peter, thank you for coming in and feeding my nostalgic memories about drive-ins.
Well, I hope you can get out to it. Bring some popcorn and bring a drink, you know, and bring someone you like.
That was WHYY's Peter Crimmins. The Y is produced by me, Annette John Hall, along with Shai Binyako, Alex Stern, Kelsey Hansen, and Sabrina Boyd Circa, under the editorial direction of Katie Culinary. We had editing help for this episode from Eugene Son. Hit me up on Twitter at AnnetteJH. Thanks for listening. Stay well. We'll talk to you tomorrow.